This is a WSMI podcast from the Tally Broadcasting Station.
Thank you. The financial regulations on U.S. agricultural sales to Cuba will be eased by the Commerce Department as part of a plan to normalize U.S. relations with Cuba. I spoke with Senior Director of Commodities with the Illinois Farm Bureau, Tamara Nelson, about the new developments in U.S.-Cuba relations.
We were very excited yesterday to hear President Obama's announcement. We have a longstanding policy at the Farm Bureau that was developed by our farmers that we oppose the use of agricultural embargoes as a way to try to change a political or economic system. And so we were very glad to see that there's some movement towards eliminating the embargo, at least eventually through the activities that occurred yesterday. We had a tour to Cuba in 2012, and we had 18 farmers that went on that trip along with three staff people. And we found the Cuban people to be very warm and friendly and not at all antagonistic towards the United States. And so we made a lot of relationships there. We've been working on some trade deals and ongoing improvements in trade with them over the last 2 years. And we know that the various prisoners on both sides that were being held, that was a major stumbling block for any further improvements. And so we were really, really excited yesterday to hear about the exchange of prisoners and President Obama's charting the course forward from here plan.
During the embargo, individual states and companies have still been able to do business with Cuba. However, it has been highly hampered, according to Nelson.
Yes, yeah, states and even small companies. First of all, because there was an Office of Foreign Assets Control and the Treasury Department involved in the transactions, because even though agricultural and food products were somewhat exempt over the years, there were still some requirements, like buyers in Cuba had to use a third-party bank that had to be a bank outside of the United States. So they couldn't use Citibank in Switzerland because Citibank is a U.S. bank. They'd have to use a Canadian bank or a French bank. They had to pay for the product in advance, and that's when the order was placed, so not, when the ship is left or when the ship arrives in their port or when the products reach their offices like you would have here. They had to pay in advance with cash through a third-party bank. So it was very cumbersome, and then it was also just cumbersome from the standpoint of if you follow world commodity markets, clearly it's a lot cheaper and easier to ship wheat from the United States down to Cuba. But in fact, we lost most of our wheat market to Cuba in the past 5 years to France, because just the extra paperwork, the additional time, the lack of ability to buy on credit, which most people and most companies do, made it really difficult for us to stay competitive in the Cuban market.
Nelson detailed the effects these newer developments will have on the state.
Illinois, if you look at Illinois and the impact of the embargo on Illinois, out of the 50 states, we're probably number 6 in terms of lost opportunities. The way they look at that is what kinds of products and services is Cuba buying or would they buy, and what states produce those and what states have ongoing relationships. So, lost opportunities to Illinois. We're 6th in the nation. That means that now that things are changing, we are well poised in the top 10 U.S. states to actually benefit from the agreement. There are only about 11 million people in Cuba, but as many people talk about, the real opportunity in Cuba is in the long term with tourism and hotels and cruise ships and foreign visitors. That population on that island has about 10 million visitors every year, and those visitors are likely to eat high-end foods that would be the type of finished product, beef, pork, etc., that we might ship from the United States. So we would anticipate, exports of corn and wheat would go up about $3.5 million a year, and these are very conservative. Exports of soy products, $1.5 million. And then other agricultural products like seeds and smaller crops, maybe about $1 million worth. And then pork and beef and dairy would be another $1 million a year. And that's just for Illinois. And again, those are very, very conservative figures. We also, it's not just about ag, there's other industries in Illinois that would really benefit from expanded trade to Cuba, and there's again about $5 or $6 billion worth of benefit, and those include real estate, financial services, business services, oil and gas products, and other sectors of our economy that would provide support and services to Cuba. So we see, you know, more than a $10 or $11 million a year benefit just to the state in terms of what we'll be able to do in business in very short order with Cuba.
Taking a more long-term look at the situation, Nelson sees more potential for the nation as a whole.
Over the long term, like for the United States, Cuba is a relatively small market if you look at like a China versus a Cuba or a South Korea versus a Cuba or even Colombia versus Cuba, because there are only 11 million people there. But there's huge potential through tourism, and also strategically, Cuba can be very important and already has at times worked with the United States on everything from addressing environmental issues in the Gulf to helping with narco-terrorism, the narcotics trade, helping to capture or identify or track people that are dealing in drugs. And so Cuba's interested in being kind of more of a strategic partner to the United States in the region, and I think this kind of a opportunity where you have a step-by-step process of social and economic opening will be a great way to see what kind of potential there is for that.
Again, that was Senior Director of Commodities with the Illinois Farm Bureau, Tamara Nelson. That's all for Part 1 of this afternoon's Farm Show. Stay tuned for Part 2 coming up after this. A report released by the U.S. Grains Council indicated this year's record crop also produced an abundance of high-quality corn. In the 2014-2015 Corn Harvest Quality Report, USGC shows 88% of the nation's corn crop rating at grade 2 or better. Kurt Schultz, USGC Director of Global Strategies, stated the average values from the report indicate the U.S. will have a crop that will store and handle well as it moves through the market channels to export. The report is based on 629 yellow commodity corn samples taken from defined areas within 12 of the top corn-producing and exporting states. The report found average test weight well above the limit for number one grade corn, 100% of sampled corn testing below the FDA aflatoxin action level of 20 parts per billion, and slightly lower moisture content than 2013. However, total damage levels were significantly higher, likely due to weather conditions, though 94% of samples were still below the limit for number 2 corn. The protein concentration was lower than 2013, likely due to higher yields. The lower grain prices have many ag lenders anxious about how farmers and ranchers will adjust. Farmer Mac economist Jackson Takish says lenders want to know how borrowers are managing the money coming in.
Be it through, you know, changing some of those discretionary spendings. I think living expenses is a big question mark for a lot of folks. Will farmers be able to adjust living expenses on the grain side to come back down to more historical averages and norms? And then on the livestock side, will profits incent more production? I think from a dairyman's perspective, it most certainly will. And you see those in the projections that are coming through now. So there's a lot of information out there from USDA and different academic institutions about just how good or bad 2015 might be, depending on what you produce.
Lenders also have concerns about crop insurance.
Crop insurance and the new programs that are coming through from the USDA and the 2014 Farm Bill. There's a lot of questions around what is the right decision, particularly when you're choosing PLC versus ARC decision. So I think there's some concern from lenders exactly, you know, how much insight and information is going into that decision. It's a very important decision for the farmers because it lasts for the duration of the farm bill. So just how much farmers are looking into that particular decision and how much information they're putting into that.
Takish says regulations may prevent lenders from helping their customers.
From a broad market perspective, so what are regulators going to do in the coming year? But also, if the farm economy kind of comes on some more difficult times, just how long will regulators let bankers stay with their borrowers? Will they require them to do some house cleaning, or will they be understanding that there needs to be some level of understanding with the borrowers and the lenders?
That's Farmer Mac economist Jackson Takish. The American Farm Bureau Federation appointed new members to the Young Farmers and Ranchers Committee. The members announced on Wednesday will serve for the 2015-2017 term starting in March. The committee is comprised of 16 positions representing all regions of the U.S. An individual or a couple may hold each committee position. Committee members are responsible for Young Farmer and Rancher program planning. National committee members are nominated by their respective farm bureaus. One of the newly appointed members is Jared Finnegan of Ashcombe, Illinois. That's all for this afternoon's Farm Show. For WSMI, I'm Angela Besh. Thanks for tuning in.